Morning, everybody. Thanks for making it Friday morning on the last full day of the event here. We appreciate you coming. We're here to talk about AI-generated content. And we're going to start with introductions, and then we'll get into the heart of the matter. My name is Howie Singer. I was the chief technologist for the strategy group at Warner Music for 15 years and now teach data analytics at NYU's music business program, as well as consulting to the industry on AI-related issues, and wrote a book on technology transformation in the music industry. Shameless plug, it's for sale in the bookstore here. And on to Marcus.
All right. Hey, everybody. I'm Marcus. I'm the CEO and co-founder of a company called Cyanide. We're a German AI company for music tagging and music search. Now, usually our customer base are sync teams that want to leverage their entire catalog for, you know, whenever they go out and search for a sync brief. But with the emergence of deepfakes and all this AI generated music, we also educated ourselves more and more in the field of using the technology that we've built, which retrieves a lot of information from the original audio input, to not only detect the genre or the mood of a song, but also, you know, what kind of vocal, what that song sound like, other kind of information that would maybe point us to the fact that this this music or this audio was AI generated. And that's sort of like the context for this panel.
Hi, everyone. I'm Amadea. I'm the COO of PEX. We are a content identification and UGC data company. We work in content recognition technology across multiple fingerprinting methods. We recognize video, but on the audio side, we do recordings with a lot of precisions around modified audio, particularly. We also work on identifying melody, so anything like a live version or cover of a song. We recognize the use of lyrics, the same use of lyrics across songs. So if things are don't have any melody in common, but are using the same lyrics, we'll be able to recognize that. And then we also work across voice and singer recognition. We are perhaps best known for our data around UGC content platforms, so scanning all of the publicly available content on YouTube, Instagram, TikTok, and the like, in order to be able to help rights holders with understanding where their content is being utilized and the virality of it. And we also work with distributors and platforms in order to ensure the compliance of the content that they're distributing.
Hey, everyone. My name is Jackson Abaduto. I am a lawyer at a law firm called Granderson Day Rocher in Los Angeles. I deal with a lot of clients who are in the tech space, but also have needs for either music licensing or music partnerships. So I'm negotiating deals on behalf of those clients with record labels and music publishers. A lot of those clients are in the AI space or, you know, want to integrate AI in some capacity. So I need to stay up to speed on all of the trends in the legal realm as they affect AI. Prior to that, I was at YouTube, and prior to that, I was at Universal Publishing. So I've been on both sides of the rights holder DSP table, and definitely have a, you know, interest in this sector.
Okay, so let's dive into the questions. Anybody who's been here all week has probably heard about 42, if not more, different ways that AI plays roles in the music industry. So let's be pretty specific about the scenarios that we're talking about, because if we're trying to identify whether things were generated by AI or not, we got to know what thing is it that we're talking about. So let's start with the scenario that sort of was the one that got everybody's attention first. We'll call it the Bad Bunny scenario, right? Where an audio performance is out that says it's Bad Bunny, but of course it turned out that it wasn't Bad Bunny. It was a voice clone of his voice. And so is there technology now available that can reliably detect whether an audio track is the real artist's voice when they've told you which artist it's purporting to be versus an imitation created by generative AI. You want to take it first, Marcus?
Sure. I mean, first of all, like anything with AI, and probably you also on day 10 have heard that every day is always about probabilities, right? Is there a high probability enough to flag something as maybe being infringing on anything, right? So it never can say binary yes or no. That's just the way it is. So it's all about, like, you know, distance measures of, you know, vectors in the latent space. So we have done a lot of research in the field of trying to get it as high as possible to detect if somebody's voice might have been used or cloned for a certain track. And it is literally, like, you know, using the same technologies that we do for genre and mood, of like extracting data and then just looking at the sound wave, and thus like having this kind of probability. And whenever it's over a threshold of, let's say, 80%, like 0.8 in the float, then we would say, okay, we flag it, we listen to it. But of course, it's not there yet to say, okay, this is like 100%, let's do this.
Yeah. Not good enough for the lawyer on a panel to go sue at the 100% yeah. level necessarily.
That's what it's all about, right?
That could be what it's all about. But we'll get to what you think, you know, an appropriate level is. So PEX takes a little different approach. And Amadei, why don't you tell us would approach that problem?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think with AI, it's important to know kind of what stage or what quality of AI, because I think there's the kind of Kate Middleton, Six Fingers kind of era of AI. And that's where some of the AI music generated content is at. And then there's eventually where it will be, or maybe where it's at already, of kind of being undistinguishable by a human like you and me. If I really hear the song and think it's Bad Bunny, that's pretty good. And so if we're talking about the latter, where it's really good, and we believe there's no way to actually, then if a human's not able to detect whether it's an AI generated voice, then probably a machine won't be able to confidently either. So the approach that we take is we've developed a singer ID. So being able to match one singer's performance to that singer's performance in another track, potentially in another language, in another genre. What that does is it takes a kind of biometric print of that person's voice. It's using its timbre, the pronunciation, etc. And being able then to recognize, okay, well, this is, you know, Bad Bunny in this AI generated song. And then what we do on the ACR side of things, on the audio content recognition side of things, is that we have a catalog of all known works, right, of hundreds of millions of tracks that are provided to us by the record labels. And so we're then able to say, okay, well, this is using Bad Bunny's voice. Is it a known track that Bad Bunny has released? Yes or no? And if the answer is no, then there's a very good likelihood that means it's an AI-generated one. So that's kind of the combination of those two technologies that we think is key to being able to recognize those AI generative examples of voice usage. Right.
But would you agree with Marcus, it's always a probabilistic argument? It's always an assessment, and there are errors made on both sides, even if low?
For sure. For sure.
So, Jackson, if we can't be 100% accurate, what does that mean for us?
If you can't be 100% accurate that we're able to identify voice, right? So in the Bad Bunny example, or any example where you're talking about perhaps a sound alike, right? This is an AI-generated voice that is intended to sound like Bad Bunny, or it might sound like Bad Bunny. You're going to really have to rely from a legal standpoint on rights of publicity in the United States, at least. we can't look at copyright law to determine liability for potential infringement here, just because copyright law does not cover somebody's voice. You don't own the copyright to your voice in the United States. So what people have looked to instead in this space is the right of publicity. What that is that it protects your name, image, likeness, your voice, your signature, and distinguishing characteristics of you. There was actually a really interesting case that we were just talking about. I think it was in the 80s with Bette Midler, where Ford Motor Company wanted to have Bette Midler record a song for their advertisement. She declined it. And they instead went to some of her backup singers, I think, and got them to imitate Bette Midler. They asked her to sound like Bette Midler. And they used that voice in an advertisement. And Bette Midler successfully sued them for right of publicity. So that's the closest analog that we really have to AI right now, or in the AI space right now, just because there's no legislation yet that really addresses this head on, and copyright law does not. There was a bill introduced by the House of Representatives called the No Frauds in AI Act that intends to establish a kind of like an ownership right in your voice and in your personhood, but I don't know if that's going to get passed. And if it does, I'm sure there'll be other issues with that as well. So, all a big TBD right now.
All a big TBD. That gives us the certainty that we need to move forward on
what I'm here for.
Business. So. One of the things that I've heard, I'd be interested to hear for you, Marcus, given that you're doing a lot more detailed analysis to get the metadata about the tracks, is that do any of these models create artifacts that remain that are detectable, that are one more signal that can be used to say, yes, this appears to be an AI-generated piece of content?
For the time being, like at the moment, 100%. And our theories or hypothesis is also that it remains like that, because there's a lot just by from the audio material it has looked at and then learned how to write a song. There's a ton of inaudible stuff in there, right? And the AI is, of course, like, you know, it's baking that inaudible stuff, and it can be six fingers right now. And of course, it gets more sophisticated, all this Getty Images kind of thing, right? It doesn't have to be that, you know, on the nose, but it can be just fragments that are this repetitive patterns in all of the music that specific AI creates, right? And that is the point. Like every AI will have different patterns in that, and you know, then you have to index a ton of music from that specific AI to be able to identify those patterns and say, like, I can absolutely point that back to that fact, to that AI. And I mean, like, you've all used ChatGPT, I guess, and the more you use it, the more you also find the patterns in like how it writes answers. And the same is true with AI generated music, but you can only identify those patterns when you have looked at a lot of the material, you know. And that's sort of the thing.
Yeah. So let's follow up on that with the question of, can you keep up, right? Everybody's right. Creating these models. There are new models. If it is possible to identify the material based on the artifacts it leaves behind, but you have to do it again when there's some new model that comes out on a Saturday morning, can you keep up? And I'll ask the same question. You know, when we're talking about 120,000 songs a day being added, even if you can identify, do you think the industry will be able to keep up with this flood of content coming and its ability to identify material as AI generated? You yeah. first, and then I'm a day.
Okay. It is absolute cat and mouse game. So I don't know. Also for us, we do all this mostly to consult on our customers on sort of like risks, so like for their risk assessment. That's why we do a lot of research in there, not necessarily to release commercial viable products. But yeah, like it will remain a cat and mouse game, and we're thinking that legislation at some point has to kick in to regulate that a little bit more.
Yeah, so I mean, I absolutely agree with Marcus. Essentially, with artifact detection, the issue is that it has to be trained on the output of said AI. And so you're always one step behind, because if you're training in order to detect it, you're training it on the output, then by definition, you're always one step behind, right? So it becomes a cat and mouse game. So it's feasible. It's also then there's a question of the business viability of is that the solve to the problem, and then I think the other way that we can today perhaps detect AI is as watermarking. And so that's an interesting path. The issue is that the current research suggests that if the intent is fraudulent, there's currently no watermarking system that cannot be removed in any way. If the intent is to defraud. So again, that's not super robust, right? So that doesn't necessarily solve the problem either. So.
Can you get a law that says you can't remove the watermark, Jackson?
I don't know. I mean, if you're removing the watermark for circumvention purposes, right? Like, I feel like that would be a reasonable thing for someone to propose. But I just don't think we're sophisticated enough to understand what that law would look like right now, you know?
So let's stick with this idea of watermarks for a moment. So it is worth pointing out, one of the issues that we have is, let's suppose we had a watermark that was difficult to remove, and to Amadeus' point, that may not be possible. But for the catalog of material for today, if we picked out the Spice Girls, for example, their entire catalog is available. So even if we now started to watermark, you have the original material with no watermark, you have re-records or new, you know, updated releases with watermarks, that's subject to an attack of comparing the files, because you have one file of this song with the watermark and one file of the song without the watermark, and you compare the two and it makes it easier to remove the mark. So given your analytical tools, do you agree that, you know, even if we, can we come up with a watermark that would survive AI training? And B, is it always going to be possible to remove those marks?
Maybe that will be like, you know, turning the cat and mouse game on its head. Like, we can always come up with better watermarks and that are not removable. But yeah, like, looking at the release ex post, like, so everything that is already released, like adding a watermark is probably not a great idea, and just gives away, like, you know, your techniques. But going forward, of course, like, you know, the achievement would be if we could come up with a watermark that is unremovable and is undeniably, you know, flagging every human created song, then, you know, the effect would be that all the generative AI stays in the today, in the 2024, right? Going backwards, because it's always regurgitating what is already has been here, right? So any new advancement, any new developments, any new subcultures that would emerge, it can't really account for. And that's probably already a big win. So I'm an optimist.
Tech optimist, that's good. Because so far it's been depressing. So let's shift gears a little bit. We've focused on voice. But of course, one could also generate lyrics. So now we're in the world of text to some degree, right? The one case that's active, which maybe we'll start there, Jackson, because the only case so far that's been filed related to AI-generated content for music is a text and lyrics-related case. Maybe you can help us understand that a little bit, and then sure, we'll go from there onto whether that's a problem we can solve from our technical...
I'd love to summarize the case, yeah. So the case that Howie's referring to is Concord Music Publishing and other music publishers versus Anthropic, an AI company. And essentially what the music publishers are arguing is that Anthropic has infringed on their copyrighted material, their song lyrics in this case, by reproducing those song lyrics for training purposes, reproducing those song lyrics again for fine-tuning the data before it becomes output, and then indirectly infringing through its users when users are able to type in prompts and essentially get full lyrics in response from Anthropic. So they figured out that you could go on Anthropic and ask for lyrics to Katy Perry's Roar, and you would get the full lyrics that match 99% of the lyrics that the music publishers had in their database. So this is almost a one-to-one copy. So there's a lot of discussion around, you know, is a reproduction right in under copyright law infringed upon when that training takes place, when the training of the AI model takes place, and then also on the output as well. Obviously, we're not at a point yet where most music publishers are able to really understand what the training material was and if a reproduction took place in of their content in that step, but they're really kind of trying to catch the AI companies on the output side and finding ways for it to kind of implicitly suggest that training has occurred with their material, like music lyrics.
Right. And it's also the case, the same thing happened with the New York Times and OpenAI, that they were able to prompt the system and get back news stories. Right.
Right. So in that one, New York Times was able to test with ChatGPT, essentially, like, can you reproduce the entire article from whatever date? And it wouldn't necessarily allow you to get that immediate of a response, but then they figured out, well, you could say, what about give me the second paragraph of that article? And they would give them the second paragraph. What about the fourth? And then they could piece together the article. Or, you know, what was so-and-so's opinion about Guy Fieri's restaurant, and they were able to like provide a quote from a New York Times review. So that's similar, very similar.
So what was interesting to me is, if people haven't seen it yet, is that the OpenAI and Anthropic, they're saying that's not the intention of our systems to regurgitate the material. Number one, we're trying to stop it, right? Because obviously, if it creates evidence that they trained on copyrighted material, that's not good for them. So they have reason to stop it from a defensive perspective, not just because it's not may not be what the system is intended to do. But it's also interesting because they claim that these repetitive attempts to use prompts to get this information out of the system constituted hacking. That was the word that they used. Mm-hmm. Is there a legal definition of hacking?
I don't think so, not in this context. I think that it's an interesting argument because they're essentially saying that the users are not using the tool for its intended purposes, right? And that nobody should be using it for this purpose. So if anyone is responsible, it's the users that are creating this infringement. I think with the OpenAI case especially, it's going to continue to put this in the spotlight because that's by far the biggest name in this area.
Okay, so let's shift gears to the text. We talked about voices and detecting. Are the same things true for what your technologies can do? Let's first start with lyrics, which we touched on a bit, but let's talk about the analyses you can do about lyrics and see whether the lyrics are AI-generated material or not.
Not per se can we detect if a lyric is AI generated, but we can detect if it's infringing on somebody else's lyrics. You know, it's the same. Like it's a similarity search. Again, like distance measures and using the text embedding for a distance measure is the same as, you know, detecting copyright infringement on the sound, on the audio. So yes, like there to a certain degree, if you want to use that in a legal case, and actually it has been tried to be used in a legal case once from our technology. I think it didn't make it in the end, but the lawyers tried to build that case on top of our analysis. So yes, that is possible, but not that it's AI generated. It can be from a human.
Yeah. So if the output contains a phrase from American Pie, you can match that phrase input and therefore infer that it was trained on the material.
Also, if you, I mean, like you said before, 99% of Katy Perry's song, So if you do a one-to-one search, it doesn't come up, right? So you have to build some sort of like text embedding first, like, you know, that kind of summarizes the information of that what is conveyed in that lyric, and then search on the similarity of this, because that will give you the opportunity to it gives you opportunity to go beyond just one-to-one word matching. So that's how we do it.
Okay. And PEX's approach to lyrics?
Yeah, exactly. We can transcribe lyrics, and we can match lyrics, and that works well. For example, if there's even beyond the AI context, if there is a reggae version of a pop song that has no melody in common, none of the recording, obviously, if it's a cover, in common, then you might still be able to detect it by using the lyrics and seeing that those lyrics match. And then in an AI context, I think that's interesting, partly because of bad or nascent AI use cases. So I think in the Drake The Weeknd case that was pretty viral around an AI generated song that sounded like Drake and The Weeknd but wasn't. I think eventually that's how they were able to issue a takedown notice for the song, was because it included a sample of a Drake or The Weeknd song, right? It wasn't actually because it was using AI generated voices, which, you know, as Jackson said, there's no rights to currently. So the ability to take action on repeated lyrics or lyrics that are infringing directly on known works is something that then there is a possibility of action against. So that's why it's interesting to detect, but it might be a very today problem, because that's not the intent of AI to spit out exactly the same thing, right? It would be inspired by at best. And in this case, then it's much more difficult.
And just to add to that, so when we say, you know, like you can't action something for your AI generated voice, right? Maybe back to the right of publicity thing, you might have a hook there. But if in the Bad Bunny example, you know, they had used a fake Bad Bunny voice to sing a Bad Bunny song, right? Then to your point, like that's an infringement of the lyrics. So then you can use a, you know, copyright law mechanism to issue a takedown there. So it's kind of a bit of like a whack-a-mole and trying to fit square pegs into round holes right now, I think, with taking some of this content down.
Okay, so we've covered voices, we've covered lyrics, now let's get to melodies, right? As the third piece of a musical work that we might have machines generating versions of that. Has anything changed, anything we've talked about when it comes to analyzing, let's just say we have a group of instrumental recordings and we're trying to decide whether they're AI generated or not. There's no voices, so we can't rely on those things. There's no words, so we can't look at the same things we might have looked at, like ChatGPT. Do we have any tools at our disposal that help us for that?
There are like melody detectors. I think you're doing that, right? So pass on the question to you, because we're not doing that.
Yeah, sure.
No, so, for Cyanide, yes for PEX. Okay.
No. So we can detect matching melody. So for example, an instrumental version of an ABBA song, a person playing it on the violin or something, then we'll be able to match the melody. Again, it's a question a little bit of threshold, right? Like how much does the melody match is important, and we're able to match a recording down to 1 second. With a melody, we might want a little bit more. A little bit more play to have a higher confidence score, because, you know, a beat is a beat. We're able to detect a matching melody. And so in that same sense, we'd be able to detect an AI that creates a melody that's the same. But again, that's not the intent in the end of the AI, right? It's going to be to generate something novel, perhaps inspired by training data, but in that case, then the melody won't match.
So we touched on this point earlier, but I think it would be good to sort of focus in on it a bit, which is this whole question of, these are machine learning models, and so what was working yesterday is improving today because it gets feedback from its performance and it gets better. You know, if you were to assess, you know, and I understand it's always a probability whether we can do this accurately or not. It sounds like you both believe your technologies are capable enough to do it today, right, to a certain degree of accuracy. You know, if we're talking 3 years from now, do you have that same level of confidence? We talked about keeping up with the volume of content. Let's talk about keeping up with the technology that is evolving and improving and learning every day. Do you believe that in 2-3 years, if we were having the same panel and we were saying, can, and you still had the same job, and we were asking you, can you detect the difference? Would you be as, what's your confidence level in that?
So it's great AI prediction. So I was like, I get quoted on that over a million times. Just determining on how much money is in generative AI versus how much money is in detecting or like AI analytics, I would say that the generative AI field is gonna outperform. So they've gone a bit, you know, more sophisticated. But like, it depends on the level of how the music industry is gonna fight back. And right now, I think they're gearing up for a big showdown. So again, like, I'm an optimist. I'm like, I come from the music industry, and I like to believe that in the end, like, you know, human creativity is gonna prevail, and it's gonna because that is sort of the means to an end, not the sound that we're generating. So there will be use cases, and I believe there's gonna be a world that the two things will get, you know, live next to each other, and it's just like, you know, an enabler of creativity. So probably I hope we don't have that problem in the future.
Okay, Amadea.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's why we're not focused on artifact detection in the first place, right? Even if we can do it now, we don't think we'll be able to keep up, and we don't think we'll be able to keep up in a few years, et cetera. So we think it's not a worthwhile premise to work on from also a business perspective, right? If we're not able to keep up, then there's no business there. We think there's more interesting areas that will be explored in the nil rights space, and maybe some interest there in being able to license your voice for AI use cases, et cetera, in which case then being able to detect your voice being used in AI use cases becomes interesting if it's monetizable. So that's where we think it's interesting to develop technology, and voice and singer detection is a robust system that doesn't need to be, you know, that doesn't need to be retrained, whether it's AI or not, because it works whether the voice is a really good quality AI generated voice or the actual voice itself, right? So that's robust, and that withstands the test of time. So that's really why we're focused on that. And I think you addressed the question of volume. I think that's also a huge question, right? Because with AI, you can generate so much more content than you can at a human creativity level. And so that's also very much what we're focused on, is being able to develop tools that are nimble enough and have, you know, are very compute efficient in order to be able to not just do that one-to-one, but do that at the greatest scale possible of millions of tracks being uploaded and being able to detect that at that scale is really important.
We'll focus on, so there's a timing question. Ask you a timing question. You talked about the likelihood we'll see new laws. I mean, given your examination of what's happened in the past, how quickly are these things going to evolve on the legal or regulatory side? Hang on one sec, because I realized earlier today I kept using acronyms and people didn't know what they meant. You use NIL in your answer, so I wanted to make sure we said NIL is name, image, likeness. For those who are unaware, I realize I tend to do it. I worked at AT&T for a long time. There were more acronyms than I can remember. So now let's go back to the question about timing and the legal framework and how this is likely to evolve quickly, slowly? Your take, Jackson.
Yeah, I think it's going to move pretty slowly, as most things do from a regulatory standpoint. I think there's certainly a need to clarify and address this, not just for the tech companies that want to use the technology, but also for the music companies and the artists that want to understand how or how their voices or songs may be able to be used. I think probably from a regulatory standpoint, the first thing that will be addressed in the U.S. is just the copyrightability of content created with AI. I think that's really where a lot of focus is in the legal space right now. If I use AI tools to create a song, do I own a copyright in that song? Does the company that that made the model, do they own the copyright? There's a lot of ambiguity around there. So I think there's a lot of, you know, swirl and a lot of tangential issues in the AI space. The EU passed a directive for some AI protections just last week, I think, but that doesn't really address copyright law. That's more about, you know, fraudulent activity, deepfake, things of that nature. So yeah, I think it's going to move pretty slow because there's just so much to deal with in this space, but certainly important.
I'm the moderator, but I get to have an opinion too. I think it's actually going to move more quickly than it has in the past for one reason, right? If we go back in history to the Napster era, and people talk about this being a Napster-like moment, the music industry was alone. The movie studios, for example, thought, we're safe, because networks were too slow to distribute movies at that point. Of course, that turned out to be a bad assumption over time. The fact that writers, graphic artists, photographers, other creative people, politicians worried about deep fakes, the fact that there are so many people more than just musicians and songwriters concerned about these issues, I think means we have some allies this time that perhaps we didn't have in the past. And, you know, more voices, more allies may help to make it move more quickly. But in all, I agree with you. In general, the law always lags by years behind where the technology is.
Yeah, and it's kind of the scary thing about moving fast, I think, for a lot of lawmakers is that they don't understand this. And I think we want to address it for sure. And there needs to be some type of guidance as to how these things are dealt with. But if we're making laws or regulations around something that they don't understand, that's just going to make things worse. So that would be my concern with, you know, moving quick.
So a last question, which I'm going to throw in there. I'm going to throw the panelists off because we prepared. And this one's an existential question. It's not a tech question, but it's one that I've had this discussion at least three times in my week here at South By. So I thought I'd ask some people with knowledge to try and answer to the question. So one of the things that's come up in this debate about what's right and what's not and training material and so on is, well, how is it any different if we have a model that trains on all of the Beach Boys' works? How is that any different than me sitting with my friends in my dorm room for a month listening to every Beach Boys song and then at the end of the month creating an homage to the Beach Boys? Are we going to stop computers and models from doing exactly the same thing that people, well, they first asked me, would you stop the people from releasing that Beach Boys homage? And of course, the answer is no. We've always had artists learning from what's come in the past. You know, great artists steal, I think Picasso said, right? So that's always happened. Is it fundamentally different, though, when we're talking about generative AI models? And I realize that's not a tech question, but I'm going to leave it open to each of you to give your view on, is that different or the same?
It is related, yeah, but it also, like, you know, uncovers where we believe where this whole generative AI thing is going to go. It's going to keep in your, you know, what do you say, in your living room. Like, you listen to the Beach Boys and you made some music that doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, people, like, you throw it on Spotify, it doesn't mean that people will actually like what you have done, right? Because, hey, like, if I want to listen to Beach Boys sound, I'm just going to go back to the real deal. And that's the same with generative AI. But like, what it did for you is inspired you as a person, as an individual, enough to get creative and like use music as a means of self actualization. And I would believe that generative AI is exactly that. It's not the perpetuation of human creativity, it's an enabler of it. It's more the perpetuation of an instrument, right? Just enabling more people to use music as self-actualization. And then, of course, again, like, you know, great artists steal. And that is the whole point about it. Like, how can you combine different influences and use your own genius to generate something or create something that has not been there before, not by regurgitating the history, but like taking your own pick on the contemporary of, like, by using the means of history. And that is something very different than AI does. So, yeah, that's our approach to that.
Amadea?
Yeah, I mean, I think I agree with you, Marcus. I think to add to that, I think there's a difference of effect, right? It's different. Is different for people to be very engaged with Taylor Swift and her works and her persona, everything she represents, and to listen to a sounds like Taylor Swift AI generated version. I think so. I think that's a huge driver of the consumption of music and you know, what makes us human and creators. So I think that's really important in the distinction. I also think generative AI is going to create some great music. Will it generate some great music? That's a conversation, rather than create it. Will it invent hip hop? I think that's not really what it's doing, right? And so I think there's definitely a threshold to human creativity and the history and the balance that can be that's really interesting, and where humans still retain an edge, let's say. Maybe I'll stop there.
Yeah, I think so. In your example, you lock yourself in a room and listen to the Beach Boys, right, for 20 days. You listen to nothing other than the Beach Boys, and then you're inspired to create something that, you know, that draws from the Beach Boys, but is not a Beach Boys song, right? And it's a brand new song, but you've just been inspired. I feel like a lot of people would take the position that that's kind of what we're doing here. That's kind of what the point of generative AI is to learn from the best things, but not to create a duplicative copy of something. I think the converse of that is if you did that and, you know, then you just released a Beach Boys album with every Beach Boys song, right? Then you're directly infringing on the Beach Boys songs. So I think that's where the distinction is. I think a lot of people have the view that, you know, AI is intending to just copy. And I think a lot of people would take the position that if it does produce copies, then yeah, there should be some consequences for that. And that, because that's not really the purpose of this, and that's not the best way of using the tool. But if you're just using it to create something that draws from different works, then, you know, it could be a transformative use of that AI, and you're creating something new, or you're generating something new.
So I agree with you. I don't think generative AI is going to create the next hip hop, and that's where human creativity will come in. We've got about 15 minutes to go, so let's shift to questions.
Is this microphone working? Okay, thank you. So I'll be very brief, but not quite brief. So two comments from me and two questions. Feel free to answer just one of them if you like. So I'm from Kasparaki. We do automated music production, AI and non-AI. I'm a lawyer by background. I'm on my third company. It's a bit like coder and lawyer. My first observation is just on the singing voice synthesis, right? You focus very much on, you know, someone creating a voice and then claiming it is a real singer's voice. I think there's also the opposite case that with source separation, a lot of these songs that are put out there are excellent training data, because you get auto-tuned voices and you annotate them and you mix them, and you might have the opposite problem, someone saying, this is not this singer, right? But in reality, it's a mixture of these three or four singers. I don't have an answer to that. It's just one observation. Second one is, I think people often make this focus on generative AI, but there's other forms of automation and for melody generation, for example, there's very sophisticated algorithmic ways to sort of generate melodies that are, you know, you know, are they infringing? They use source materials and apply algorithms to them, right? And people often focus on just the AI deep learning aspect of it, but automation is broader. Those are my two comments and my questions. This whole New York Times OpenAI case, right? To me, this is almost like we don't need to talk about anything else until this is resolved, because either if you talk to people in an OpenAI, they're very open about the fact that, of course, they use only copyrighted material, and all they're making sure is that on the way out, it can't be detected, right? This intended use thing, right? But if they succeed in establishing a fair training doctrine, right, then a lot of this, the whole industry, the whole world will go a completely different path than if they don't, right? And I wanted to ask the lawyer, what really do you think? Is there going to be a fair training exception like this, a fair use exception, right? I think it's fundamental to everything. And then a really difficult question for the guys, because you do something very interesting with trying to sort of find out if something is watermarked. One thing I've heard some people say this week, and I think it's complete bullshit, but I just wanted to validate this. There are companies who claim, because it's relevant, so let's get this context clear. So if you do a licensing deal with a label and get all their song catalogs and train a model on that, right, and then you have basically a fully legal model that you license out, right, then you have this secondary question: if someone pays for this, how do you distribute the $9.99 among 100,000 artists, right? And you know whose works went into what the model created. And there are people this week who have said, easy, I have a method to tell you this is 5% this guy and 10% that guy. I think that's bullshit, but I wanted to hear from you guys because you're actually doing this. So thanks very much, and sorry for taking a bit longer.
Thanks. I mean, like, I've seen, like, once a Gemini, like, was quoting things, so it was like directly, like, you know, showing the path of which content was used. Like, based on our research, I don't think it's a current thing, but I think, like, in the future that will be possible to just kind of like decompose the track that was just generated to then tell you which works have been put into that. Like, I just think that it's going that way, but I've not heard that is possible today. Yeah, so same for me.
Yeah, I mean, when we match on recording, melody, et cetera, we'll be able to say, okay, this matches to this, and this matches to this, and this is 5% of that, et cetera, et cetera. So we'll show the snippets of matching. That's not how money is split in music. Anyway, it's not because you have a 5% sample in the song that you get 5% of the, you know, publishing. So I think that's a simplistic idea around how the money actually gets split, and doubt it would end up being split that way.
Want to take the fair training exception?
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting question. I think the probability that something such as the fair training doctrine would be enacted for AI, I think it would depend a lot on, you know, what the tool is used for, what the output tends to be. If people are using ChatGPT or Anthropic just to, you know, bootleg New York Times articles or creating infringing songs based on existing lyrics, I think the argument is less persuasive. I think that one of the examples that I read somewhere, I forgot where I read it, for in favor of fair training was essentially like, imagine a AI model that is training used to train self-driving cars. So we want to create AI to help with self-driving cars navigating streets. And as part of the training data, you're feeding it images, thousands of images of streets and stop signs, and you feed it 10,000 images of stop signs, right? And some of those images are copyrighted because a photographer has taken this beautiful picture of a stop sign. But the reason that you're training it on these pictures is not to train it on, like, you know, the copyrightable elements of that photo. You're not training it to show, like, the lighting and the angle and all these things. You're training it because you want it to know what a stop sign is. So I think, like, if that's the intent, if we're training ChatGPT or training Anthropic on music or whatever other copyrighted material, but the intent of it is so transformative, where we're not aiming to, you know, replace or displace creators, I think the argument is stronger in favor of that. I also just think that ultimately it's going to be, you know, a commercial relationship that dictates these things, and maybe not a training doctrine, because I don't know if companies like the New York Times and Sony Music and, you know, they're going to want to make sure that they find a way to get paid on this. So I feel like a settlement might be more likely than anything else.
Yeah. I've used this phrase before. Ultimately, these issues will be settled in courtrooms and conference rooms. And the conference room negotiation over the rights will depend to some degree on how those court cases are going. So I think the worst thing that could happen for the content industry is 6 decisions in a row that favor a fair training model. They're going to keep getting appealed and they're going to keep going. And, you know, it took 10 years to file sharing to reach the Supreme Court of the United States. If some of the decisions go one way and some of the decisions go others, then both parties think they need to come to a reasonable accommodation in that conference room. But if one party thinks, because there are 6 decisions that went their way, they don't need to pay at all, it's going to be a difficult time.
Hi, my name is Kat. I have a question for all of you. I'm a musician, but I have a lot of friends in different artist discipline industries like film, writing, game development, digital art, things like that. Seeing how other industries have been impacted by AI, such as layoffs, strikes, theft, unethical AI, and things like that, I'm curious if a question for all of you, if all of you think that our industry will be impacted as heavily as theirs, or if you think that those industries have set enough of a precedent with how they've like fought back against AI that we will have some kind of framework to build off of.
Despite the fact that we've talked a lot about the, you know, the worries we all have in detecting it, I actually think I have more faith in our creators and musicians to use AI in interesting ways and create some phenomenal new things using these things as tools, right? You know, it's auto-tune on steroids, right? So it will, that part will be great, but I think these questions about the appropriate uses and compensation for artists are going to have to be settled. If those go the wrong way, I agree with our previous questioners, you know, if that goes the wrong way, it could be very difficult for artists and songwriters.
Yeah, I agree with Howie. I think the availability of really amazing AI tool lowers the threshold to being a musician today. And so I think we're going to see billions of people creating music. And I think that's really interesting for human creativity. I do think some sectors in the music industry are going to be deeply affected by AI generative music. I'm thinking kind of production libraries, perhaps. I think that's kind of the elephant in the room for those areas, but those areas that I think are more protected, such as, superstars, where there's a lot of effect. I think that's, you know, that's in a different category.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of fear right now, and I think people are making, you know, preemptive decisions to either not get into an industry or layoffs, right, because people are scared of AI, but ultimately, I agree. I think that once the dust settles, I'm hopeful that everything will be okay.
And we know Marcus is an optimist already.
Already, yeah. No, I touched on that, so I'll leave it to you.
Thank you.
Hey, my name's Jason. I manage a big catalog. A company's called Submit Music. It's over 100,000 recordings. So we're looking for a tagging solution, Marcus. Maybe we can talk later. But my question is more so about the amount of submissions we're receiving. We get hundreds or if not thousands of submissions a day, and we do a lot of automation to reject infringing copyright or duplicates or anything with, you know, qualities of recording that aren't acceptable for streaming services or licensing. And the big thing is that we still have to do manual review for signs of AI-generated music or anything really that we're looking. So you discussed all of the attributes of music, like melody and tagging and what have you. But my question specifically is, for my case, when I'm trying to actually detect whether a submitter is putting in AI generated, only AI generated music into our system, is there a way to identify indicators that something is AI generated purely, or that it is man-made? Or do you have any indicators that you're aware of that I could keep in mind for that?
I mean, yeah, I think so. For us, we say no, not reliably, not in the long term, but in the short term, what you need to do is, you know, plug in an ACR technology that has a reference catalog of all public, you know, all released works. And then, you know, whenever people upload content to your platform, being able to detect whether that's matching anything that's already released. So that's our solution to that problem and how we work with distributors and catalogs and rights holders in the market.
You said you're a music library, right? I think then detecting if the track was generated by AI is less of the problem, like coming from a business, not from the ethical point of view, but like from a business model point of view, less of a problem than, of course, checking if somebody is infringing on somebody else's song. Like, you know, we had that, I think we can all agree that Bad Guy from Billie Eilish was very, very, very novel when it came out. It's a very, very new sound. And it took it about like 15 days or something for a lot of production music libraries to have, funnily enough, like, oh, serendipitously, exactly the same sort of sounds on that platform. And, you know, using a thing that we developed, it's called Similarity Search, where it just, like, you know, compares different audios on how similar that sounds. Like, that can be, of course, be a liability then, right? And when somebody of the rights owners goes out and search for that content and then sues you for copyright infringement, that's not good. But I think then also in the context of a production music library, the risk is not as high. Like, you can go out and build a similarity search, and if you have a copyright infringement case, sure, that's bad for you. But like, if you're an AI company and somebody's going for you, that can be much worse for you as the AI company. Because like, the volume is just bigger and the threat is bigger than just one piece of music in a production music library.
Maybe a question back is, are you trying to avoid it because you're not supposed to distribute to certain services AI-generative music?
Yeah, that's why. So just one follow-up is that music is mostly made, you know, with a DAW, like Ableton or Logic, and then it's made maybe with microphones. But now that it's generated with whatever AI is doing, I guess my question is specifically, are there ways to identify that? And it seems like it's kind of an unknown.
Yeah, I think that it's a kind of an impossible task that's been put out there to say, oh, no to any AI generative music, because you can't tell. And especially because AI is used within tools in a very acceptable way to create music, but using AI tools, the definition of where something is AI generated and something is human generated using AI tools is really blurry. Maybe that's something you can say something about, but it's kind of definitely an industry wide problem to say.
Right.
You can't let through anything AI generative. I think the more important thing is not to let through anything that infringes on somebody else's copyright.
Yeah. Many of the models that are looking at things like photos, like the fingers, right? They're looking at indications of liveness and reality. We make things more difficult because we use tools that make voices sound inhuman, right? So, you know, is the voice of Cher on the song Believe really Cher's voice? No, it's already been digitally manipulated. So that makes it harder for us to deal with the audio problem than perhaps in some of the other industries. That didn't help you any, I realize. But it is worth noting, we do things that actually make it tougher, right, for people to find things. I think we have hopefully time for one more question. Okay. One more.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Yes, that will be me. How's it going? My name's Henry. I'm from Rice. I work on machine learning algorithms, so not necessarily like music AI detected, but in general. So my question is kind of related to the example you guys mentioned to like OpenAI versus New York Times. So OpenAI got caught right-handed because they were able to do some sort of prompt engineering and then just got exactly retrieval of the original paragraph. But my understanding of music generation or generative AI in general is that is usually an end-to-end system that you can't really prompt it in a way so much. Maybe in the visual world you can, but in the music world, usually you just put lyrics or some reference material. So my question is, once the generated model output like a novel material, what are some good ways to detect that one to be for example, use an unfair or unethical training material. So I understand that voice similarity can be one way of doing that. Obviously, that your output is similar to like the protected artist. That is one way to say that, okay, you steal my copyrighted stuff. But when there's some perturbation around that, that will be very hard to prove, right? And the other, and the more technical side of the question is that I guess your model also kind of output like a confidence score of some sort between the similarity of the two samples. How would that hold up in court? Because usually the general copyrighted detection require like some sort of overlap material of that, but a percentage, is that going to be good enough for now? Or if not, is it going to be good enough in the future? Just a visionary problem. Thank you. Yeah.
I think on that substantial similarity point, I think right now we're still using, you know, the current test for copyright infringement, which is it substantially similar enough at a very high level. So there's not, you know, there's not a percentage. There's nothing to say like, oh, if you match 85% of this work, that's copyright infringement, you know? And there have even been cases like the Marvin Gaye case where the Blurred Lines case where you're just accused of copyright infringement because of the feel of a song, right? So it's like, it's very subjective and courts hold different things. So there's no real way to put a, you know, numerical percentage on that.
So here we'll close with my prediction, which is instead of having musicologists in these AI cases, we're going to have technologists competing on the two sides to say, yes, it's AI generated that's similar, and one that's saying, no, it's not. So it's going to be a job for expert witnesses, one of the cases where AI will create some new jobs. Thank you all for coming.
Thank you.
Have the good rest of South By.
Thank you.
Thank you.